a Monday vibe check here at Run It Up. The thing that fills my dreams, Justin, scenarios in which Trevor Lawrence ends up on teams that aren't the Jets. Because
that would be pretty cool.
That'd be good for football. But that's not going to happen because the Jets aren't winning another football game this year. So that means they're winning no football games. So I guess it wouldn't be another. They just aren't winning a football game. It's pretty sad. If your 2020 is not going well, imagine living in 2020 and being a Jets fan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank God I have the Titans.
Tighten up. So, I was intrigued by this, so I went looking for answers. I found a man by the name of Charles Curtis. He writes about the NFL at For the Win, the USA Today site covering all things sports. He writes a thing every week called the Unpower Rankings, ranking the worst teams in the NFL. The conversation we had was a little bit about Lawrence, but also about why there are so many bad teams in the NFL this year. Because if it feels like there's more than usual, it's because there is. That conversation's up now. All right, we are now joined by Charles Curtis, the man who once dropped a foul ball at Shea Stadium and was booed by 35,000 angry Mets fans, and as he says, has still yet to recover from it. When he's not doing that, he writes about the NFL at For the Win, does a column, a power ranking, I don't know how you'd describe it, ranking the worst teams in the NFL, which, my friend, is particularly interesting this year because there are several of them, and Trevor Lawrence is the prize at the end of the rainbow. Before we get into all that, though, Charles, how you doing?
I'm doing really well. Thank you for having me on and reminding me of my failures, but that's fine. I have still not lived that down, but the sound that comes out of a stadium when you are the one being booed, I for professional athletes. And by the way, I call them the unpower rankings. That's kind of my personal joke. The weakness rankings, it doesn't sound as good as unpower rankings.
No, I like it. You know, you talk about boos. If there were fans in the stadiums, there would be many boos. When we talk about the teams that you rank, it's the 10 or 9 or so worst teams in the NFL right now. And as these teams start to jockey for position on Trevor Lawrence, who I don't think it's hyperbole to say is the most touted prospect, at least since Luck, maybe since Manning, there's this story now unfolding of who is going to be the worst. Can anybody be worse than the Jets? I'm going to start there. I do have a theory about the Jets. We've seen some coaches fired in the NFL already. Kind of in jest, kind of not. Do you think there's anything to Adam Gase being retained because it makes them worse?
Yes, I think so. I mean, I think that's speculative, right? I don't have any
source. Yeah, of course.
But I think that there is something to be said about, also, like, maybe management is thinking, we got to give them a full one more season just to see how it goes. But I think in the middle of this season, there's no point in firing a coach, getting better. There's a conscious effort going there. That said, the Jets played pretty well.
They did.
On Sunday against the Bills, they had ample opportunities to win that game or at least get closer in that game. So you may see the Jets win a game or two, which would be costly, obviously, if they're looking for Trevor Lawrence. And let's also not forget, if Sam Darnold there, you need, sometimes with quarterbacks, it's not day one. You need 3 or 4 years to see what you really have. And so what we're seeing develop, and what I agree with you about these rankings and sort of looking at these teams getting worse, is you have some teams that have those developmental quarterbacks, and it's turning into the situation that happened in Arizona where they drafted Josh Rosen and then they fired everybody and put in a new coaching staff, and then they drafted Kyler Murray. So that could happen conceivably this year. So yes, I agree. Fascinating story. I love it, writing about every week.
So the Jets are one of several bad teams that you write about. To be precise, one of seven teams this year with either one win or fewer. That is the most since 1986, since this point in the year. Do you think something with that, all these teams being bad, the Vikings making an obligatory move to get bad, which we will talk about later on in this interview, how much of that has to do with how special Trevor Lawrence actually is?
That's a hard one to answer because I don't think any NFL team would admit to tanking, and I don't necessarily see some teams that are tanking in this group. Like, consciously. I mean, I think the Jaguars, for example, are a team that, you know, they've traded away tons of talent for draft picks. That's a team that's clearly moving in that direction. Like the Giants, for example. The Giants are a team that drafted Daniel Jones to be their quarterback of the future. They have drafted to try to improve their offensive line. They signed James Bradbury as a free agent. So that's not necessarily a team that's trying to tank. But and the Falcons were what? They could have three or four wins if they didn't blow all those games. And think about the Texans. The Texans are a laughingstock thanks to Bill O'Brien's terrible GM decisions, let alone coaching decisions. And so it's funny to me that there are all these horrible, horrible teams. I do think that at a certain point you look at your schedule and you go, I think it's time for us to lose. But I don't see any other than maybe the Jaguars and to an extent the Jets truly and utterly tanking and sort of being conscious about it.
Right. It's kind of this line where you want to ride the fence. It's a little different this year, too, because you can't have fans in stands, so you don't have to worry about that revenue stream and getting people into the building as much. Do you think that contributes to it at all, where some of these teams are maybe, you know, I know you were saying that maybe it's not an all-out thing, and it's harder to convince NFL football players to tank compared to basketball players because the earning potential is shorter and coaches get fired a lot easier and it's just harder to do. Football players are going to go play football. But when we talk about a team like Minnesota making the move that they made, trading away Yannick Ngakoue for less than they used to trade for him only a couple weeks ago, and he had been productive, are you seeing that as kind of a move to say where we aren't so great right now, maybe let's think about our future instead of trying to make a push to the playoffs, that kind of factoring into things?
We could answer that one in a week when there's the NFL trade deadline.
Yeah, true.
That is a good example of a move where the Vikings took a step back, I imagine, and said to themselves, we're 1-5, or they were going to, right? Did they trade him before that game? So 1-4,
yeah.
Whatever it was.
It was this week.
Taking a step back and saying, we should recoup some of the value that we gave away. And that is sort of waving the white flag. That's what good organizations do, I think. We'll see in a week. I could imagine that the Cincinnati Bengals might make a move or two. I would be intrigued to see if the Dallas Cowboys do that, because that might be the right move at this point, is to trade away spare pieces for draft picks, because you just know, like, this is not the year with Dak Prescott done for the year. So I think you may see some of that, and I do agree with you that maybe not having fans in the stands and depending on people coming in and paying money to see football. Again, some teams are doing that, but yeah, that is totally, I think, a factor, especially this year.
So there's an interesting thing, I think, developing there, kind of a subplot to this, where you've got these teams like the Vikings, the Cowboys, the Falcons, with these rosters that have potential, established guys that you believe in. The Vikings moved on some of the faces on their defense, but it's still Thielen, and then Jefferson's emerging, and it's this positive situation. But they're finding themselves in these places where they've got one win and are near the bottom. Philosophy-wise, for a team like Dallas that's got Dak Prescott but may have to pay him a lot of money this offseason, and now there's the injury cloud kind of looming over his head, what do you see them doing? Do you think they start to position themselves to potentially take a quarterback this year if the opportunity arose?
I don't think so. I think with the Cowboys, they're probably going to have to end up paying Dak Prescott. I don't see there being any other way around it. If they let him go and he recovers, what is that going to look like? And we know that the Cowboys under Jerry Jones are just very – they seem to always be conscious of how they're viewed, because they're, you know, quote-unquote America's team and all that. And that's just sort of the legacy that Jerry Jones wants to build. And I think that if you let Dak Prescott go, it's a huge mistake, even though he's going to come off of a devastating injury. That said, they're going to end up paying him less than what he would have earned had he not been under the franchise tag, which is just awful. And that's unfortunate and horrible part of the business here. But no, I don't see, unless they really end up with one of the worst records in the NFL, I just don't see that happening. And they won't be the worst. I don't think they will be. I think there are other teams, and I sort of talk about that in my unpower rankings, that you have teams that just clearly, given their records and also just given what's coming up, I don't see them landing in the top, I don't know, three, you know, but I could see them in the top five.
Yeah, and again, we talk about all the minutia that's going into this, but this whole other thing with Trevor Lawrence being this guy that everybody wants. Everybody wants to take Trevor Lawrence to the prom. And then you've got these teams with these pseudo-established quarterbacks like Minnesota, like Atlanta even, who's hinted at potentially moving on from Matt Ryan and trying to go a different direction. Is there a threshold to you where a team could get up there, like the Bengals, who took their guy last year, and potentially have to move down off taking Trevor Lawrence? How many teams in this top 10 of yours are really committed to their quarterback over a guy like T-Law?
That's the millions of dollars question, yeah. Right? I think that is the most scintillating, intriguing part of this whole thing, right? Because the Vikings, Kirk Cousins is getting up there, so yeah. I see them doing that. The Bengals are an obvious trade-down candidate. They would say, we're going to sit back, highest bidder, give us tons of first-rounders. That would be the most fun, I think, for NFL fans everywhere. And for the Bengals, who actually have Joe Burrow, who looks really good so far in his rookie season. But when you get to a team like the Jets and the Giants, you get to a point where you say, are they going to do this Kyler Murray thing all over again? Where you see the Jets saying, let's get a coach. Maybe we hire like Lincoln Riley. I'm just making it up. You know, somebody who's a mind in the college ranks that they say, oh, like this guy could really do something with Trevor Lawrence. And then you trade away a Sam Darnold or a Daniel Jones. And that's just a really tricky position to be in. We saw it kind of work out with, I shouldn't say kind of, it really worked out with Josh Rosen, right, who was on the short end of the stick. But with Kyler Murray, you've seen this year, he's exploded in the right offense. He just pulled off an upset last night against the Seahawks. So those are a couple of teams where I question that. I say, are you really going to – and you have to take Trevor Lawrence. That's the other thing, right? Like Trevor Lawrence, like you said, one of the best quarterback prospects, if not the best since Peyton. I think probably since Andrew Luck, because the hype was there for him. But, yeah, a team like the Falcons, I could see them taking him and saying, you know, learn under Matt Ryan for six games and then switch it up. Or trade Matt Ryan in the offseason. But that's trickier. That's a little bit trickier with the contract.
So a lot of quarterback success in the league is circumstantial, right? It really depends on where you end up going, or else you could be like Josh Rosen, where it's maybe a little bit of both sides of that coin, where he wasn't that great and the situation wasn't that great, but all of a sudden he's on a practice squad, 3 years after being drafted. So when you look at this group of quarterbacks that are in this class, there are a lot of them, but Trevor Lawrence is the guy. Which situation amongst these teams that are vying for this first overall pick do you think could be the best for him? Because it's certainly not New York.
Well, the best situation, I think, of this group, it would be, pipe dream would be him going to Dallas. That would just, with all those guys around him, with CeeDee Lamb being the second best receiver. Maybe he's the best receiver over Amari Cooper, but yeah, that would be the ideal, right? A team that automatically is ready and has the weapons around him. But as far as like a comfortable situation, That's a tricky one. I mean, maybe because Atlanta's defense is terrible. I'm looking at Jacksonville would be interesting just from you're starting everything all over again. So maybe, it's a young team on the rise, kind of the way the Bengals are redoing things. I'd say even Minnesota, because again, Dalvin Cook around you, you got two established receivers. The defense hopefully bounces back at some point. So maybe one of those, but I mean, I'm biased. I'm from New York. I grew up a Giants fan.
Yeah.
Fun to see Trevor Lawrence in New York carrying that torch from Eli Manning. But again, Daniel Jones has shown flashes. Like, I think that if maybe sometimes Daniel Jones were in a better offense, like, might be a situation where you'd regret trading away Daniel Jones. But again, like, I'm you can see me back doubling down and backing, because you sit there and go, Trevor Lawrence is it. So when you have that opportunity, you got to take it.
Yeah. No, that's that kind of dueling banjo that I think we're seeing with a lot of these teams, is just, is your guy better than Trevor Lawrence? The answer is probably no, so what do you do? And I think it is indicative of a thing that's happening in the league where teams just aren't really as committed to quarterbacks anymore long-term, because everything is so much more immediate. I don't know the numbers, but I have to imagine coaches are hired upon their first hiring for less years per average than they were 15 or 20 years ago. So I think that the timetable is all sped up. Something that I do think is interesting is that when you look around the league, the best quarterbacks aren't the guys who went 1-1. I mean, you've got guys like Stafford and Matt Ryan who are good, and then you saw Kyler play well last night, and there are some of the good quarterbacks in the league were the first overall pick, but a lot of them were guys taken at the back end of the top 10 or the back end of the first round or even day two and three. So if there was a guy in this group of quarterbacks that you saw, maybe it's Justin Fields, maybe it's even Mac Jones, where you look at them and say, there is an ideal situation for them out there. Do you have anything in mind in that regard?
I will admit to my shortcomings, I'm not a huge college football guy. I sort of pay attention more closer to the draft because then you start. And we've got guys on the For the Win staff, shameless plug, who are better with that answer because they will know. But I think Justin Fields is a perfectly fine second quarterback to take. I mean, he's got some of the skill set that you want in a modern day quarterback. And I think that it's not necessarily a consolation prize. Like there are people out there who are saying this kid is really good. So I think if you're not the team that ends up with Trevor Lawrence, like that's okay, because you end up with a guy like Fields who is in any other year might be a number one overall pick. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's a fascinating angle as well, is just nobody's unseating Lawrence, but second place might not be so bad either. So personally, I think the Jets are finishing last. I think they're going 0-16. Their schedule's pretty tough the rest of the way. The Patriots are probably the worst team that they play the rest of the season. In terms of who you think finishes in the number two slot, who do you think the best bet is?
I think right now I'm thinking about the Jaguars, and only because of the fact that there's some rumblings now that they might bench Gardner Minshew, and that just would he's already having some struggles here and there, but is Mike Glennon really going to lead them to four or five wins? I'm not so sure about that. And obviously on the defensive side of the ball, there's nothing going on there. So I think they probably have the best shot. I mean, I have number three. I still think the Giants are a team that opponents are just beating up on. And the Giants are also a team that have had some close losses. An interception here, a late game mess up there, and they're, you know, reverse those and you got three wins. So, but I still think they're a team that is still struggling, young quarterback, still trying to figure out how to not turn the ball over. So they've got a really good shot as well. I think the dark horse might be the Houston Texans, which would give the Miami Dolphins a top pick, and they've already got their quarterback. So that's another situation where they say, well, we have Tua, and I think we have to develop Tua. And we'll see. I think that's part of the reason why we're putting in Tua now, is to see what we've got over the last 6 to 8 games of the season. And then you have a situation where there would be the highest bidder, give us your whole draft, and we'll give you the first overall pick.
Right, Ricky Williams type situation.
Right.
Yep. So last question here. The team that isn't listed on your top nine in your article is New England, who is really struggling right now. And I don't understand why people thought they wouldn't, other than Bill Belichick, because it's not just losing Tom. It was also losing Dante Hightower and some of the other guys on this defense. And they really don't look good. So do you see a way where they inch their way up into this discussion and potentially look at taking a quarterback for the future?
You've tapped into something that is a favorite thing to do among NFL fans. There has been, we've written, I think, three or four, I don't think it's that many, but we've written a bunch about fans saying, oh, here go the Patriots. They're going to tank on purpose for Trevor Lawrence. Like, that's Bill Belichick's mastermind.
Right. Galaxy brand.
It doesn't totally make sense for a variety of reasons. Obviously, I think it's a little tongue-in-cheek, but yeah, I think that if Cam Newton keeps playing like he has after coming back from COVID, I think that's a concern. But I think that Bill Belichick is Bill Belichick. He's going to find a way to get wins. I think Jarrett Stidham, you know, didn't look good in that first start of his, but I think that if he ends up starting, which I don't think he will, I think Cam Newton's going to be the starter the rest of the way. They still have to see what they truly have in him and if this is just a little bump in the road. I don't see them trying to tank on purpose. I don't see them losing as many games as a bunch of other teams on this, but we'll see. I mean, if they end up, it would be shocking to me if they ended up like a 2-10 through week 12 or 13. I just don't see that happening, but it would be kind of a real fun plotline for NFL fans everywhere to see Bill Belichick having a terrible team and trying to get the best quarterback prospect in 10 or 15 years.
Right. No, in a lot of ways, it feels like the right move to make. It's just you could never picture Bill Belichick letting that happen, and I don't anticipate that. So that's Charles Curtis. You can find his work covering the National Football League at For the Win. You can also follow him on Twitter at @ByCharlesCurtis. Charles, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks, Peyton. Really appreciate it.
So that was a really good time, I thought. Really cool of Charles to take the time out of his day to talk to me about bad football teams. But it is something that is developing into one of the main storylines in the NFL is that not only do you just have seven teams that have one win or less, which is, as I said in the interview, the lowest total in the NFL, or the highest total of teams that bad since 1986.
It's a quarter of the league almost.
And it's incredible. It is incredible, and I love it very much. Watching this race to who can be the worst to get Trevor Lawrence and the other quarterbacks at the top of this class is an awesome thing. The best thing that's happened in 2020, honestly. So, I've got an opinion about Trevor Lawrence and Joe Burrow and other quarterbacking things that you're going to want to pay attention to here, because it sounds controversial now and it'll probably end up staying that way, but it might also not. Nobody saw Joe Burrow coming last year. I think I might see something coming right now. So, stay tuned to figure out what that is. Run it up. WKGM Fox Sports Knoxville Fan Run Radio. Run it up. Coming at you live from the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios of Fox Sports Knoxville. And so I put out a poll today, Justin. You saw it. It was a question that occurred to me earlier today of two different quarterbacks, one of which is the presumptive number one overall pick in this draft, one of which was the guy that came out of nowhere to be the first overall pick in the prior draft, Trevor Lawrence and Joe Burrow. And Trevor, we've already talked about today, is this guy that is this really rare talent, and you know exactly what you have, and it's special, and nobody can deny that.
Generational.
Yeah, I think, and that's not the wrong, that gets overused, but he truly is generational. We have not seen a quarterback with this level of skill set, because you can say what you want about Andrew Luck, but he wasn't 6'6 and couldn't move like Trevor Lawrence can. And he didn't win at the level that Trevor Lawrence has collegiately. I don't know if we've seen a more flawless prospect at quarterback ever. I don't feel like that's a reach.
No, not really.
And that's a big statement to make, and maybe I don't know that much about what Johnny Unitas' comps looked like coming out of whichever college he went to. But Trevor is that guy, and he has warranted all the expectation. Joe Burrow came out of nowhere last year. And I was curious, because you think about Lawrence and what he is, the established guy. The numbers aren't necessarily otherworldly, but he has everything you want. And then Joe Burrow, who soared to such high heights his final year at LSU, was virtually flawless, perfect. What if you put those two guys in the same draft class? Let's say that Trevor Lawrence was now a junior last year and comes out. Who goes first overall? Justin, what do you think about that?
I mean, I still think Trevor goes first overall. I just think that's a hard guy to get around. I mean, we talk so much about what the player he is. There's no real holes there anywhere to poke, like, I don't know where you point a weakness out, and he's proven that since he was young, like since high school, we've been seeing this.
Yeah.
So I think it's hard to get around that.
Yeah. No, what he did as a true freshman against Alabama would have been enough if I were an executive to say that's the guy I'm taking first. And he has consistently lived up to that. It was a little bit concerning at the beginning of last year, the turnovers, but he admitted himself that was him forcing it to try and live up to these astronomical expectations in his first year as the full-time starter. And that mellowed out throughout the year. They did lose to LSU in the national title game, though. He was out-dueled by Joe Burrow in that onslaught, which I think is interesting. How narratives change. Because I think Joe Burrow doing what he did anywhere would have been something that would have elevated him to being that first overall pick, right?
But yeah.
The fact that he was the guy who brought LSU out of the Stone Age, the fact that LSU was also perfect and won the national title, I think played in a lot to everybody saying, okay, how can you not take this guy? Because as soon as he got an opportunity to actually throw the ball in a way that's in the 21st century, look at what he did. And the Bengals certainly don't regret it. He looks fantastic.
Other than the fact that he's going out there and getting
killed.
Killed every week, but yeah.
It's decreased a little bit. And, you know, maybe if you're the Bengals, you want Joe Burrow to win one of these close games. Because it feels like they're in these every week. But he did everything he could last week against Cleveland, or this weekend. I mean, he got him the late touchdown. Baker just answered right back. But that's besides the point. The point I'm making is that we didn't see Joe Burrow coming. And there's a quarterback in college football right now that I feel like is in the similar vein that we aren't necessarily giving that kind of first-round attention. Like we weren't giving Joe Burrow that kind of, this guy could be the number one overall pick attention after 5 weeks. After Texas, there was a little buzz, but certainly not what it turned into. And Justin, while we were off air, you made the point to me that, well, that's because Joe Burrow got better as the season went along, which is also true.
Yeah, I mean, I think you could pretty easily argue that the national title game was his best game of the season.
Yeah, he was unstoppable against Oklahoma. But the point I'm making is about Mac Jones. The Alabama quarterback that coming into the year, just like Joe Burrow with Miles Brennan coming into that season where there was a quarterback competition, a lot of people thought Edwards was going to get this job, and I didn't know why, because Mac Jones had been really good every time he had touched the field for Alabama. Of course, they lost to Auburn, but look how many points he put up in that start. Look what he was able to accomplish in a limited role against Tennessee that year. And then he comes in, tears up Michigan, and everybody's like, they're going to give it to Edwards, starting job. And I didn't understand that. All Mac Jones has come out and do since he got the starting position at Alabama is ball. Let me give you some numbers here. At this point in the year, five games in, Joe Burrow, 1,864 yards, 23 touchdowns. Mac Jones, 1,905 yards, only the 12 touchdowns, but he's completing nearly 80% of his passes. Mac Jones is a guy that we didn't know much about before this year. There isn't a sample size. So he has the opportunity, if he continues to play at this level, I'm not saying to unseat Trevor Lawrence because I don't think that's really happening. But if Mac Jones continues to play at the level he's playing at, it's akin to what Burrow did last year. And he's not going to be able to capture all these records because the season's shorter. And he's not going to be able to be the guy who helped LSU to win a national title when it was thought that maybe that was behind Louisiana State University. Because he's at Alabama. So he's going to get that kind of treatment, even though I'd say that LSU offense was as talented, if not more talented, than this current Alabama one, but Bama looks as unstoppable as LSU did last year. And I know I literally said last week that I'm going to stop comparing teams to LSU, because that should have been a one-off juggernaut. But when you look at Alabama and what they're doing right now, and I don't know how you can't, and Mac Jones is at the center of that, mind you, at this point in last season, Joe Burrow had played Georgia Southern, Northwestern State, Texas, Vandy, and Utah State. None of those teams have a good secondary. The only team there that was remotely decent was Texas, I know Utah State had Jordan Love, but they weren't fantastic last year. And Texas defense wasn't that good. Mac Jones has done this against Missouri, Texas A&M, Ole Miss, granted, not a good defense, but then here are two good ones, Georgia and Tennessee. And they have been unstoppable. Alabama has punted like six times. So I beg the question that if Mac Jones continues to do this throughout the year and then potentially out-duels Trevor Lawrence in a potential national title game, maybe even Justin Fields along the way, what do we do with him?
I mean, professional prospects for Mac Jones, right? That's kind of the question here, right?
Yeah, so I don't think he's this is probably not happening. But he's been perfect this year.
He's played very well. I mean, he's looked like a great quarterback, right? Much better than what was expected because he was just kind of expected to come in and be a stopgap.
Reminds me of a turbocharged Coker, Jay Coker.
I would say more turbocharged A.J. McCarron, but yeah, okay.
Fair enough.
Same Fair kind enough. Of thing. But I just don't foresee any situation, even if he beats both of them head-to-head. That makes it closer. It does. Where he gets around two guys at the top of this quarterback class who have appeared to be head and shoulders above the rest of the class for, what, 3 years now in Justin Fields and Trevor Lawrence. I just don't think he gets around them either way.
I don't either, but it begs a really interesting question that a lot of these GMs are going to have to really think about.
I mean, I'm not going to say that Joe Burrow was not worthy of the draft position he got last year. He was. He had the best college season by a quarterback of all time.
Right.
Without a doubt, almost, right? It's very hard to argue against that. But it also helped him to be the number one overall pick in that, other than him, the quarterback class wasn't all that outstanding. I mean, you didn't have any big, big names in there. I mean, they were good, but, like, you didn't have...
I mean, Tua, Justin Herbert...
Yeah, but none of those guys have the name power, besides Tua.
Who got hurt, to be fair.
Yes. That Fields or Trevor Lawrence carry.
That may be true. But, and maybe it was a byproduct of the draft class. But I don't know if I buy that, because I think Joe Burrow...
I still think he's the number one overall pick, regardless after that season.
I don't know if, coming off a national title, Justin, so let's just say that Trevor Lawrence comes out at the end of last year. Because Trevor Lawrence is not raising his draft stock with anything he's really doing. I think there were some little things that make you a little bit more confident, like him getting whacked against Miami and then coming down the field and running somebody over into the end zone and getting up immediately and talking trash, which is awesome. But he also did that against Ohio State last year in the semifinal, that long run. So I don't know if he's showing you anything you didn't know about.
I mean, that might be his biggest weakness is the fact that Trevor Lawrence has been so good since he started in college, right?
Right.
That you haven't seen that much of an upward progression simply because there's not a lot.
There's nowhere to go, but
like,
I mean,
you're hitting the ceiling, right? Ceiling is the roof, quote Michael Jordan.
But he pretty much is, I think there's improvement. I think he's got a better understanding of the offense. He's elevating guys where he didn't have to do that early in his career because he had Higgins and Ross and all these other receivers. But the point I'm trying to make is that if Joe Burrow, because I think so much of this gets washed away with time, if we're coming off a game where Joe Burrow was so much better than Trevor Lawrence was in that national title game, that matters. If that's the last thing we saw, that matters. So if Mac Jones goes head-to-head with those two guys and beats them, I don't think he's passing them, but the discussion happens. And that was not something we saw. Because if Lawrence is coming out last year, and you just saw Joe Burrow outplay him thoroughly in that national title game, that say what you will about the analytics and being able to separate everything and just look at guys critically as an NFL GM, but that hangs in your head, and you can't ignore that. That we saw these two guys on the same field, and one of them indiscriminately looked a lot better than the other. I'm not saying it will happen. I don't think it will happen. I don't think Mac Jones is taking the mantle from either of these two guys. If the Bengals aren't up there at three, are in that top three to take Penei Sewell because that's a logical pick for them to bolster that offensive line. I can see a world where it goes 1-2-3 and it's some combination of Trevor Lawrence, Mac Jones, and Justin Fields.
I mean, yeah, if everything happens, if he was to beat both the other guys, I think he definitely earns that third spot.
They are overwhelming some of the best defenses in the country. I think Tennessee is a top 20 to 25 defense in America. I think Georgia is the best defense in the country. And he's hanging 45 on them, Justin.
Yeah, and you can make the same argument for Burrow that I'm about to make last year with all the playmakers that are around him.
Right.
But, I mean, Mac Jones has a ton of playmakers around him. I mean, he has...
It's not the same amount, though. Now that Waddle's down, especially, he's still dominated Tennessee without Waddle.
Now that Waddle's down. But Meechie's really good as another guy to come
That's
in.
That's fair.
Devontae Smith's probably the best receiver in the country.
Splitting hairs here, but
Najee Harris is the best running back in the country.
What I'm saying is Terrace Marshall was LSU's fourth guy last year, and he is one of the top five receivers in the country right now.
That's fair.
Offensive lines, they equate. I'm starting to see a lot of similarities. Alabama defense, uber talented, but because of how fast their offense is scoring, they're giving up some points. I don't know. I don't think Mac Jones, because I think Joe Burrow took away some of the allure of that one-hit wonder season, because we literally just saw it, I think some of the buzz and the hype kind of dies down around it. But I'm just saying, keep an eye out for this guy, because he has put on a better performance than any quarterback in college football so far this year. He has been the best quarterback in 2020 college football. Am I wrong?
No, I think that's fair to this point.
They played the hard part of their schedule. He's only going to continue to put up numbers. It's a little different than Burrow. Burrow was making throws outside the pocket that made you kind of have your head explode. A lot of what Mac is doing is off play action, but that throw that he fit in to Mechie, in between that too high look, the corner and the safety coming down, and there's about a foot window to throw the football into that you have to anticipate 35 to 40 yards downfield. That's an NFL throw. That's a throw that some guys in the NFL cannot make. And we just have not seen anything from Mac Jones so far. This is what we've seen. This is our sample size. And the sample size has been that he has been the best quarterback in college football. So I don't know what you do with that as an NFL GM if it persists. It may give you pause. I still think Trevor's the guy. Mac Jones can't run like a deer. He's not 6'6". But gives you something to think about. That's something that was on my mind today. I'm glad I got to share it. Like I said, I don't think it will happen. And I don't want to chase my tail just reiterating the same points. But Joe Burrow going first overall didn't seem possible before the season. And it happened. So maybe I just want to be a little bit early to that party. This is Run It Up. We will continue with the Sunday's Best when we come back. WKGN, Fox Sports Knoxville, Fan Run Radio. That's our cue to start closing things down here. We'll finish up today with something I debuted last week. I'm going to continue doing it. Sunday Best. We should probably get a bumper or something. Maybe that Meek Mill song.
Or just the song Sunday Best.
That would work too.
Okay, I'll think about it.
All right, thank you. So, there was a lot that happened, whether it was, sorry Atlanta Falcons fans, I tried to avoid it. Can't really do it. Whether it was the Lions somehow finding a way to come back because Todd Gurley tried to not score and fell into the end zone, and then the Lions marched all the way down the field and got a touchdown to win the game. That was incredible. The two former number one overall picks, Baker Mayfield, Joe Burrow, trading haymakers at the end of the game, and then Burrow winning on the split decision at the bell with that touchdown to Donovan Peoples-Jones. The Titans game was insanity. there was just so much good football around the NFL. Chad Henne scored a touchdown for the Chiefs. But the game in prime time lived up to the hype. NBC made the right choice flexing Seattle and Arizona into primetime. Games in that stadium just look so good on TV. I don't know what it is. Primetime games, and I don't even know what it was, Phoenix, Bank of Phoenix or whatever stadium. It's since changed. I think it's State Farm Stadium now. It's just got an aura about it. And, you know, Al Michaels and Collinsworth were joking about how the last time they called a game in that building, it was a 6-6 tie. This game also went into overtime. It almost was a tie. And the fact that Kyler Murray kept his team in the game long enough to give them an opportunity to win at the end was a sign of a step forward for him. But the moment of the weekend, and I looked for other alternatives, was DK Metcalf chasing down Buda Baker and making that play. The interception, Buda picks off Russell Wilson inside the five. He's moving at 21 miles per hour. He sees the end zone in front of him. He wants to go get this pick six. He's not had an interception in his career aside from the one he had last week, and now he's got an opportunity on Sunday Night Football to go 100 yards the other direction and score. And here comes DK Metcalf. This guy who some people said we counted out. I said he got drafted in the second round, which is not too bad. You know, but somebody that we weren't sure was going to be great in the NFL, who's arriving this year, and he didn't necessarily influence the game that much with his production. He had a game-winning touchdown wiped out for a hold. But I don't know how many guys in the league can do what he did, not just because of the speed that he achieved, but I don't know how many stars in the NFL, which that's what DK Metcalf is now, maybe he doesn't know it, give the kind of effort required to go that fast and go tackle Buda Baker. Most dudes would see it as a meaningless play because, well, the Cardinals are probably just going to score anyway, so is it really worth expending the energy? But that never crossed DK Metcalf's mind, and that was just awesome. That's what football is really about. Watching guys compete that hard, want it that badly. Again, it was almost like a childlike exuberance watching him chase him down. Because a lot of times the plays like that, as we get older, going that extra mile, it just doesn't seem as worth it. But DK Metcalf wanted to go make a play, and he wanted to do it because he wanted to help his team. And he went and made that play. It was just really cool. It was really, really, really cool to see. The game was awesome. Realistically, that entire game could be the quote-unquote Sunday best because it was the best thing that happened on Sunday. But that play in particular, even in a loss, was the most spectacular play that's happened in the NFL all season. I would love to see the numbers on a play like that being made. Like, how many times has a guy picked the ball off inside the 5-yard line with nobody in front of him and gotten chased down? Especially with the amount of distance. DK Metcalf made up 10 yards. And it was just like watching Usain Bolt in the final stretch of his run.
You know what it was like?
What was it like?
You know how Atlanta Braves do the freeze thing on the outfield
yes,
track?
Yes, that's exactly what it was.
Exactly.
That will be tweeted from the Run It Up Twitter. Thank you for the idea. That's fantastic, Justin. But it was just like you see him coming and you know Buda doesn't necessarily see him until he looks up into the Jumbotron and sees this mass arriving from behind him like a hawk, a seahawk, swooping down on its prey. And it's just like you knew he was going to catch him. You saw him coming and you knew he was going to catch him. And then in hindsight, you're like, wow, he really just did that? And that's what's so cool about football is guys doing things that we think are impossible. Sports in general. It's just really cool. It was just really, really cool. It's 9:58. That's our Monday show. Top 10 Tuesday returns tomorrow by popular demand. We'll run it back then. Got a little bit better today. We'll see you tomorrow. Bye-bye.